I seem to have an ability to visualize a map in my head. I'm able to do something like drop pins onto the map for where I know I am, and I'm able to keep track of where I am in relation to a destination. An example is I was backpacking in the mountains of Colorado. We passed a suitable camping site but couldn't find another before dark. I was able to navigate back to the suitable site in the dark, probably about a mile distance in the forest.
Navigation is critical to humanity's survival. Some scientists believe our wayfinding abilities were the crucial skill that differentiated Homo sapiens from Neanderthals and led to modern civilization. But while some of our brains are excellent at navigation, others, hand raise here, not so much. It turns out if you rate your sense of direction on a 1 to 10 scale, you'll probably give yourself about the same score as a scientific test would. So we asked you to do just that.
I'd rate my sense of direction at like an 8.5, possibly a 9. Very rarely have I been turned around or lose my sense of direction.
I strongly believe that my navigation skills are really, really good. Having been a private pilot for 50 years or so, I very seldom get lost, either on the ground or in the air.
So yes, we heard from a few very confident navigators, but many, many more of you sounded like this.
I would rate myself about a 3, maybe a 2, in the ability to get around. When my children were small, anytime I said, I'm going to take a shortcut, I would get this cacophony of screaming in the car, please, no, don't take a shortcut.
It's been a problem all my life, from getting lost in department stores as a kid to just yesterday getting lost 4 blocks from my daughter's house.
And it's so consistent with me that to the point of when we get to a stop sign and I think we need to go left, my husband knows that we do need to go right, actually.
I took a job with a major courier, and it was my family said, how are you going to do this? Because you get lost walking across the street.
Thanks for those messages. All of you with terrible direction, you're not alone. In fact, scientist and science writer Christopher Kemp is just like you. His lack of navigation skills inspired him to study why some people get lost so often, while others easily find their way. His new book is called Dark and Magical Places: The Neuroscience of Navigation. He'll join us after the break to talk more about his book and help us understand what's happening in our brains when we try to go from point A to point B. I'm Jen White. You're listening to the 1A Podcast, where we get to the heart of the story. Remember to join future conversations, download our 1A Vox Pop app, and leave us a voicemail.
Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Jo knows that lockdown has been hard on us as humans.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult. The connection that happens between people can be very powerful, and how healing it can be to have a healthy relationship with someone.
To get matched with a counselor within 48 hours and save 10%, go to betterhelp.com/1A. Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Jo knows that lockdown has been hard on us as humans.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult. The connection that happens between people can be very powerful, and how healing it can be to have a healthy relationship with someone.
To get matched with a counselor within 48 hours and save 10%, go to betterhelp.com/1A.
Over this last year and a half, the world's been through a lot. So on this season of the StoryCorps podcast, we'll hear stories reminding us that even when times are hard, we can still begin again. Listen to our new season wherever you get your podcasts.
We're discussing the neuroscience of navigation with scientist and science writer Christopher Kemp, who joins us now. Hi, Chris. Welcome to 1A.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I have to say, I was just fascinated reading the book as someone who I would rate my navigation skills just maybe around 5.5, 6. You know, once I'm really familiar with an area, I feel like I can get around it pretty well, but it takes a minute. But some of those messages we heard probably sound familiar to you. How did your missing sense of direction inspire you to write this book and look more deeply into what's happening in our brains when we navigate?
Yeah, well, I mean, firstly, a 5.5 or a 6, I mean, I am jealous. That's, wow, I could only hope for a score like that. I score myself more like a 1, or if I'm feeling really good about myself, maybe I'll give myself a 2. And, you know, that's what really inspired me taking kind of a closer look at how my brain does this, or how it really fails to do this, because where I struggle with that, all of this kind of spatial abilities on a daily basis, my wife is an incredible navigator, and she will often perform feats of navigation that to me just seem almost supernatural in their sort of ability to make sense out of total nonsense. And so regularly we'll go to a city that we haven't been in for 5 years, and she'll be able to point out places that we've been to, restaurants we've eaten at, shortcuts to take to get to venues or hotels that we've stayed at before. And, you know, that's I'm seeing this happen, and I'm the person who sometimes drives past my own house. And so that kind of extreme difference in the way that we really perceive the world and the way that we move through the world is what really sort of made me think, why is that? You know, am I the outlier? Am I the only outlier? And is there some better way to explain my struggle? So that's what really sent me on that journey.
Well, let's listen to what Neve in Philadelphia left in our inbox.
I have always had a terrible, terrible sense of direction, and I've always kind of known it. It hasn't gotten that much better with age, but there was once when I was about 14 or 15, I went for a run from my parents' house, and my mom thought to herself, I wonder where Neve is. She got a collect call with my sort of trembling voice on the other side of the line, and I said, Mom, I'm lost. I don't know where I am. Can you come and pick me up? She asked me to describe where I was, and she started laughing because I was less than a mile from the house, a place that I drove past daily for years and years, a local elementary school, and I just had no idea where I was. So I'm not quite that bad anymore, but I'm pretty bad.
Neve, thanks for leaving us that message. Something stood out to me in what Neve said there. When she was driving, she was able to, you know, recognize where she was, but when she went running, she lost that sense of direction. How much of this is driven by, you know, how we're moving through the world, if we're in a car versus whether we're walking or running?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think that one of the most important things, and this is probably what sort of really informed Neve's reality, is that the brain is extremely complex, and no two people really navigate the same way. You know, that we're all unique individuals, and so we don't sort of perceive the world in the same way, and the different brain regions that are involved in navigation might work differently in different people. So one person might rely very heavily on landmarks and visual information to navigate by, and another person might use cardinal directions like north, south, east, and west, might be very familiar with, you know, where they are in a cardinal sense. Some people might rely on, you know, their memories a lot more. Some people might rely more on instructions, turn-by-turn instructions. And so for someone like Neve, I mean, if she's learned a route really well by road, then when you sort of deviate from those habits and you try to take it a different way, and you're seeing the whole route from sort of a slightly different perspective, that can really throw some people off. That's one of the things I really struggle with. You could show me a building that should be very familiar to me, and if I see it from a slightly different angle, it's just really hard. I can feel my brain sort of trying to struggle to process that and to understand what it means in a spatial sense, and I really struggle with that.
Well, people who are really bad at directions or building cognitive maps, they're likely to rate themselves a 1 or 2 at navigating. And there's actually a name for the condition. It's called developmental topographical disorientation, or DTD. Explain more about what DTD is.
Well, I mean, I think one of the best analogies, I think a lot of people have heard of face blindness, prosopagnosia. It's this idea that there are people who can look at a face, a familiar person, even a family member, and the part of their brain that processes faces just doesn't do the job for them. So they just cannot recognize that person, even if it's a very familiar person. And this condition, DTD, is sort of, it's the spatial equivalent of that. So there are lots of different regions of the brain that sort of parcel out the job of understanding where we are spatially and how we move through the world. And in those people, it's not doing what it's supposed to do. And the most interesting part of that is that the estimates are that it might be as much as 1% to 2% of a normal healthy population are struggling in this way. They're just completely lost all the time. And there are, for listeners who are interested, there's a battery of online tests that you can take, and it takes a couple of hours to go through them, but you know, they can really give you a good sense of whether you are one of these people. So,
Christopher, you actually took the test to discover if you have DTD, and it's likely that you do. What was that process like for you?
It was really interesting, actually, because I took it, and at the same time that I was taking the test, I asked a few friends to take it too. I asked my wife to take it. And, you know, there's some tests that are, one of them is used as a control, and it's a facial recognition test. And it's that, you know, that idea of prosopagnosia. If you've got that, that's kind of a different problem completely to a spatial problem. So on a battery of tests where I'm shown faces and I have to try and recognize one person out of a group of people, I scored 100%. I am a super recogniser. Mm. But on tests where, you know, one of the tests is that they show you a mountain scene from above, and it looks almost like the kind of a topography that you would see if you were flying over, you know, parts of the western United States, the four mountains all sticking up. And then you're shown four images, and one of them is that same mountain scene, but from a different angle. And you're supposed to pick which one is the same mountain scene as the first one you were shown. So what you have to do in your brain is kind of mentally rotate the scene so that you can visualize it from different angles and do all that just in your brain, which to me is just, I mean, when I was taking the test online, it felt like just chance, like I was just flipping a coin. It was totally impossible. I could feel my brain sort of seizing up just trying to do it. But for my wife, it was fun. It was simple. She was able to do it. And so, yeah, those tests were really informative because they provided kind of a concrete way of me assessing my abilities and really understanding the ways that I struggle.
One of you tweeted this: are self-identified bad navigators better at getting back on track? My experience is good navigators are very bad once they get lost, maybe because of stress, ego, or just lack of practice being lost. Chris, what do you think?
Oh, that's, I mean, for me, I think that bad navigators, when they're lost, just seem to get even more lost. Mm-hmm. there is a term that it's spatial anxiety, and a lot of people who really struggle with navigation also have spatial anxiety. And that just, for me, the way it manifests itself is that when I'm lost, I just become completely incapable of kind of sifting through even the spatial information that I have that I can access, and I just become almost non-seeing. And I think that's the same for a lot of people who really, really struggle with this stuff.
We got this tweet from David Pierce, who says, I have poor navigation skills, maybe two, maybe one. I call myself Wrong Way Pierce. I also find it hard to remember names when initially introduced. Maybe I'm nervous or in a stressful situation, but is there any connection? Chris, I don't know if this was a specific area of your investigation, but what do you think, this connection between remembering names when he's initially introduced and his poor navigation skills?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, this whole idea of the cognitive map, that is, all of that work is performed by a part of the brain called the hippocampus, which is devoted to learning and memory. And so it's really quite possible that someone who struggles with navigation tasks could also struggle with memory tasks as well.
We'll be back with more of our conversation with Christopher Kemp, author of Dark and Magical Places, The Neuroscience of Navigation. A reminder to have your questions answered on future topics, or just to let us know what you think, tweet us at 1A.
Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Joe knows that lockdown has been hard on us as humans.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult. The connection that happens between people can be very powerful, and how healing it can be to have a healthy relationship with someone.
To get matched with a counselor within 48 hours and save 10%, go to betterhelp.com/1A.
Over this last year and a half, the world's been through a lot. So on this season of the StoryCorps podcast, we'll hear stories reminding us that even when times are hard, we can still begin again. Listen to our new season wherever you get your podcasts.
Why are some of us terrible at directions while others always seem to know their way? We're talking about it with Chris Kemp. His new book is called Dark and Magical Places, The Neuroscience of Navigation. Chris, how are navigation skills affected by gender, if they are at all?
That's a really good question, because I think that there is this sort of idea in popular culture that men are better at navigation than women, and it's something that's really been allowed to take hold. And you know, it's been difficult to counteract that, because it's really been difficult to look at a lot of people at once and test their spatial abilities all at the same time, which is what you would need to do. But with phone apps, scientists have been able to do that now, and what we see is that there's really no difference between men and women in their abilities, and this is really important, in countries where women are equal to men. And so in those parts of the world where women are not free to drive and not free to open bank accounts and vote and all those sorts of freedoms that we take for granted in the West, women are not as good at navigating as men are. And that kind of makes sense, because when you think about cognitive maps that we use, if a woman isn't free to go and navigate the way that she would want to, then she doesn't have the ability to build those maps to use. But more generally, men and women do navigate slightly differently, which I think is really funny. When you basically, women always outperform men at object location tests, so they're able to sort of remember where objects are with much more accuracy than men are, and men always usually outperform women at mental rotation tasks, so they are much better at being able to sort of mentally rotate objects.
Is it clear why those differences exist?
It's not really clear. For a long time, scientists basically hypothesized that it went all the way back to our early evolution, and that men, the intrepid hunters, were sort of tracking herds of animals across the landscape, and so they were able to sort of rotate the landscape and try to guess at where the herd of animals would come out, and they could go around a mountain range and meet them, that kind of thing. And that women were the hunter-gatherer people. You know, they would have to know where all the important medicinal herbs were. And I think that theory has, it's just kind of been shot full of holes now, basically. Women can get as good as men at mentally rotating objects if they're given, like, 12 hours on a video game, that first-person kind of video game, or if they're trained to do origami for an hour a week for 3 months, they perform easily as well as men do. So that sort of leads us away from all of those evolutionary theories.
Now, your book begins and ends with the story of Amanda Eller, a woman who went hiking in Hawaii and ended up lost in the rainforest for more than 2 weeks. And, you know, while people typically have some funny stories about getting lost, her story is very serious. Why did you decide to start your book with Amanda's tale?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that's the reason. You know, for people who struggle with navigation, It's often this sort of charming, kind of amusing idiosyncrasy. They're always getting lost, driving past their own house, that kind of thing. And I just wanted to sort of try to frame it in a way that would get people's attention because, you know, what's at stake is people's safety. I mean, Amanda Ella basically went to a forest reserve and put her phone and water bottle in the car because she was just going to go for a 10-minute walk, and she was gone for 17 days. And her story is really one of the happy stories because there are people every year who do the same thing. They go for a short walk, they get turned around, they're lost on the trail, and it can end in death.
Well, Steve in Virginia wanted to get into the conversation, and here's what he left in our inbox.
A few years ago on an island in the south of Brazil, I got disoriented on a hike in the woods when I couldn't see the ocean. I wanted to go north, but I repeatedly headed south. I believe the sun caused my problem. Even though I wasn't aware of it at the time, I think I was using the direction of the sun to orient me, and all my life the sun had been to the south of me. On this island far south of the equator, the sun was to the north, so I instinctively turned away from the direction of the sun. That's the only explanation that makes any sense to me.
Steve, thanks for that message. Chris, how do the sun and moon help us find our way?
Yeah, that's a really, really interesting story from Steve. It's definitely true that we use the sun and the moon. And, you know, maybe we do it in a conscious way, but maybe like Steve, we do it in a sort of unconscious and subliminal way too. But scientists have tested this by putting GPS trackers on people and testing their ability just to walk in a straight line across a landscape. And, you know, subjects can do extremely well during the daylight when the sun is out. But if the sun goes behind a cloud or if they're asked to do this task at night when they can't see the sun, then, you know, the GPS tracker just shows that they're going in squiggles and loops and it's incredible to see just how incapable they are of just walking in a straight line across a field. And so I don't doubt that story. It's a really interesting anecdote.
Well, let's get back into our inbox.
My name is Jackie. I'm from Charlottesville, Virginia, but I grew up in Layton, Utah. And the way that the street systems in Utah are mostly made are kind of on a grid system. So I kind of always knew which way I was going and which way to head to get home. In Charlottesville, though, nothing makes sense at all. The streets are all curved and all over the place, and there's no mountain ranges in sight for me to lay my bearings.
We also got this tweet from Ann who says, I'm excellent at navigating, except in Atlanta. That city totally confounds me. We visit regularly, but I get lost at least once every time we are there. Same, Ann. Same for me. But it is harder to find your way through some cities than others, Chris. In fact, there's a rating scale to measure that. What makes a place easy or hard to navigate?
Yeah, it's a good question, since so many of our American cities are built on that kind of grid system. A city that is very predictable and grid-like is considered low on an entropy scale. You know, entropy is a measurement of kind of chaos, if you like. And many cities in other countries, other parts of the world, older cities, particularly medieval cities in Europe, are very unpredictable as, you know, small winding alleyways, and there's almost zero grid at all. Lots of them are built around a winding river. And so basically the data seem to show that if you were raised in a very predictable grid-like city, you are going to be a less proficient and efficient navigator than if you were raised in a more chaotic, entropic city.
So actually in that chaos, you're forced to work the parts of your brain that help you find your way, so they get a little more work. Well, we're hearing from lots of people about GPS. Let's go back to our inbox.
I'm Sarah from Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
My name is Carla. I'm from Decatur, Georgia.
I have been on the road in sales since 1987. And my sense of direction used to be excellent. I could read a paper map without any trouble whatsoever. They're pieces of artwork now.
I have a terrible sense of direction. If somebody says turn right, I turn left. It's always been a nightmare, especially when I was a reporter on the road. I was always terrified about missing my assignment because I got lost. I love having a smartphone. It always tells me where to go accurately.
Since 2006, when I got horribly lost in Pittsburgh, I've used a GPS. And today, I can't find my way to the grocery store without directions on my dashboard. My sense of direction is numb.
I'm worried about my kids because they always use smartphones to get wherever they're going. As a result, they don't even know the names of our neighborhood streets.
Some joy of travel is clearly missing.
Sarah, Carla, thanks for those messages. Chris, how has our reliance on GPS affected our brain's ability to navigate?
Yeah, it is actually really concerning. I think one of the most concerning aspects of it is that this technology really became ubiquitous without us asking that question. You know, there's maybe a handful of really good scientific studies on the effects of GPS on the brain. And, you know, one thing that we do know is that that part of the brain, the hippocampus that is involved in learning and memory and that makes our cognitive map, if you put people into an fMRI scanner that measures their brain activity and you get them to navigate a virtual environment, the hippocampus, as you would expect, just totally lights up. It's just very activated. And if you do that and you give people GPS instructions and tell them where to go through their virtual environment, the hippocampus is completely silent. So it has been switched off, if you like. And so people who are, you know, like the callers there, people who are navigating via GPS, they're basically automatons. They're not building any kind of cognitive map. They're not having any kind of spatial understanding of where they're going. You know, you ask someone to sort of turn around and retrace a route that they've just taken by GPS, and they won't be able to do it because their brain has been switched off.
So what should we think about as we head out into the world? Because I know for myself, having moved to a new city fairly recently, I lean heavily on my GPS to get around. But how should we think about navigating our world in a way that helps us strengthen the parts of our brain that are doing this work?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a couple of things. One is that I really hope that the providers that make GPS might step in, because there is some research showing that there's ways to kind of alter GPS devices so that you can engage the brain at the same time as using a GPS device. And my hope is that that's the future, as we start to kind of think about integrating technology with our lives instead of allowing it to dominate our lives. So that would be the first thing. But the other thing is that we just have to remember to look at the GPS devices, but then put them down and try to still do a little bit of navigating ourselves. I think that would be the most important thing.
That's Christopher Kemp. He's the author of Dark and Magical Places, The Neuroscience of Navigation. Christopher, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
Today's producers were Paige Osborne and Avery J.C. Kleinman. Our podcast is produced by Barb Anguiano. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. This is 1A.